Corey Seager is one of the hottest hitters on the planet right now. Does that mean that he is poised for a career year in his year two with the Texas Rangers? Plus, Nathan Eovaldi seems to have found his velocity. What that means for the Rangers rotation, why it could take them from being good to being great. All that and more on this episode of Locked On Rangers. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Rangers, your daily Texas Rangers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are locked onto the Texas Rangers. I'm Bryce Patrick, a cripplingly addicted Texas Rangers fan since 2010, the founder and host for all four seasons of this Locked On Rangers podcast. Thank y'all so much for making Locked On Rangers your first listen every single day. If you're not already, you can follow me on Twitter at Bryce Patrick. You can follow the show at Locked On Rangers. And the best way you can help grow the show is to subscribe on YouTube and comment, you know, why don't you just comment happy birthday, taking the day off recording this on Monday. So if you feel like it, the best way you can help grow the show is just to comment happy birthday below, or Corey Seager is amazing. What, one of those two things, either one. Nathan Eovaldi is amazing. I don't know. Dealer's choice. Just say something nice and subscribe on YouTube. So this Rangers rotation is looking like, I'm having to temper my expectations and literally just like calm myself down, take some nice, deep, soothing breaths when I start to look at this Rangers rotation and get too excited about it because, you know, we've all been burned before. We've been Texas Rangers fans. We've known what it's like to have hope and have that hope absolutely taken out from under us. But right now, when I look at this pitching staff, it's kind of hard to temper those expectations. I mean, the Rangers have a 1-2 that is among the best in baseball. They have the best number one in all of baseball. And Nathan Eovaldi, well, he's probably not the best number two in all of baseball. I'd say that's probably Max Scherzer. There are a few other different number twos out there that might be a little bit better than Nathan Eovaldi. But Eovaldi's up there. When you compliment him with DeGrom, especially with how DeGrom looked on Sunday, I mean, just good Lord. This rotation is absolutely stacked, and it's not just those two on top, but it is the depth. But I think Eovaldi, he is the difference in taking this rotation from being good to being great. He found his velocity this spring. He has looked like the 2021 version of Nathan Eovaldi, the one that got Cy Young votes for the Boston Red Sox and was absolutely electric in 2021 and was a first-time All-Star. Last year, he kind of faltered off of that rotation, but he was sitting in the upper 90s in his Friday start against the Brewers. He touched 99 miles an hour multiple times, and according to Kennedy Landry, he averaged 95.7 miles an hour with his four-seamer last year. And last year for the Red Sox, he only had four fastballs at or above 99 miles an hour in 2022. So the fact that he touched it multiple times, which means at least two, so at least half as many times as he did in the entire 2022 season, is a good sign for him and for the Rangers. Now, even with a limited, slower fastball last year, he was still fairly effective for the Red Sox, 109 innings and a 3.87 ERA for those Boston Red Sox in 20 starts. And of course, as I'm recording this during the Rangers game, Corey Seager has another hit because that's just what Corey Seager freaking does. We'll get to him in just a second. But how this rotation has stacked up so far in the spring and actual A-game spring games so far from Kennedy Landry tweeted this out. Jacob DeGrom, 3 innings, 2 hits, 0 earned runs, 0 walks, 4K. Nathan Eovaldi, 5 1/3 innings pitched, 0 hits, 0 runs, 0 walks, 9 strikeouts. Andrew Heaney, 7 1/3 innings, 9 hits, 4 earned runs, 4 walks, 11K. Not super great, but John Gray, 9 innings, 4 hits, 0 earned runs, 1 walk, 5K. And Perez, 6 innings, 7 hits, 2 earned runs, 0 walks, 4K. So Heaney's been a little bit heavy on the walk side, but outside of him, the other four starting pitchers have combined for 1 walk. One. Just one. I know none of them have actually pitched 10 innings yet, but you combine them up and I think that's like 20, 30 innings of just one walk between those other guys. And Heaney, I think 3 of them came in his first outing when he just did not look like or feel like himself. And the strikeouts have still been there for him. I mean, 11 Ks in 7 1/3 innings. But man, this is just a really, really exciting rotation. I think that Perez is the only one who's had a season similarly as good as Nathan Eovaldi's best season. I mean, Andrew Heaney was pretty good last year, and John Gray at his best has been pretty good for a season. Not quite the level that Perez was, and not quite the level that Eovaldi was in 2021. But I think that Eovaldi is probably going to be the number two starter, and if he can go from being, pretty good to really darn good to great, that is going to take this rotation to the next level. If he and Perez both look like they're all-star selves, and this goes from a pretty good above-average rotation to top five, if not top three, in all of baseball. That's a lot of pressure to put on them, and obviously there's a lot of health concerns with the everybody, but still, that ceiling, that level that they could attain, that is not even that far out of reach, that neither of these guys are very far removed from their best career seasons. That is something that is definitely worth dreaming on. Now, the back end, the depth of the rotation is not quite as stacked as I was hoping that it would be if everybody was healthy, but thankfully the guys who are injured are not the top five guys at this point. Jake Odorizzi will not be ready for opening day. He had some right arm soreness that he had been dealing with throughout the spring. I think eventually he will be ready. I haven't seen any definite dates about when he will be ready. Also, Glenn Otto was scratched from his weekend start due to right lat tightness. So right side tightness. So we got all kinds of different tightness. You know, we had left oblique. That's shoulder. My bad. None. I don't know my muscles, clearly, because I'm such a big workout guy. But right lat tightness, I believe that is in the shoulder. So I think that last long relief spot will probably go to either Dane Dunning or Spencer Howard. Dane Dunning, who is on the mound today, has allowed three runs so far through four innings, but has looked mostly fine. I think it's going to be down to either him or Spencer Howard. And, well, Spencer Howard has only thrown, I believe, two outings this spring. So maybe that's not necessarily going to happen. So it seems like Dane Dunning, who I didn't think was going to make the opening day roster, might end up scraping by as the long relief man. But still, not the worst option. Actually a pretty decent option considering where the Rangers had been with the depth of their starting pitching / long men that you're using. And again, hopefully you're not using those guys too much anyway, because your starters are going super deep into games. Coming up, we're going to get into the hottest hitter on planet Earth, Mr. Corey Seager, what he should be expected to do, what he's looking like, and what is leading to this change. But first, this episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps people find the right people for your team faster and for free. You can add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can hire quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonMLB. That's linkedin.com/lockedonMLB to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Now, Corey Seager, who already has two hits in today's game before we can update the baseball reference page to see how insanely hot he has been this spring. He has just been absolutely the most on fire you could possibly be. So far through 14 games, which I believe does not include this Monday game as you're listening to this on Tuesday or whenever, he is hitting .457 with an on-base of .513, slugging percentage of .829, a .1341 OPS. He's got four home runs in those 14 games, as well as a double, four walks to five strikeouts. The guy has just lived on base. Absolutely set up shop there, put up a tent, bought some real estate on first base. He lives there now. I mean, he's got $325 million coming his way over last year through the next 9 years, so he can afford to buy some real estate on first base, and he has made it his permanent home. The guy has been absolutely on fire, locked in, and he is one of the poster children for people who were victimized by the shift. Raise your hand if you've been personally victimized by Regina Jones or the shift. Corey Seager's hand goes straight up there. So does Marcus Simeon's, and so does Joey Gallo. But this is about Corey Seager, who has been absolutely incredible. And it seems like this has really opened him up. We have seen some versions of the shift be bantered around and tried out in spring training, ones with the traditional kind of shift. But instead of using your infielder and leaving the left side of the infield open, which you can no longer do, some of these teams are bringing in the left fielder to play in that kind of shift short right field spot. And against Corey Seager, you can't really do that because he does a good job of spraying balls to the outfield, not quite as extreme, but more of the pulled ground balls to where the second baseman usually is in that shift. That's kind of what he has been betrayed by in the shift the most. But he's still a pretty complete hitter and still putting a lot of hard contact onto baseballs. Last year, most of the advanced numbers, I should say, even though his traditional numbers looked kind of poo-poo compared to what he normally does, most of the advanced stuff looked pretty similar. I mean, his batting average was a career worst, I believe, .245, but his expected batting average was in the top 5% of baseball. 95th percentile. It was at .283. That is what he was expected to bat based on how hard he hit balls and how the ways and places in which he hit them. But it just did not work out for him. Same with the expected slugging percentage in the top 3% of baseball. His expected slugging was .510. The actual slugging, .455. I think a lot of this was the shift. I don't think all of it is. And I think part of it will be a mental shift as well as a physical shift. Just like of mindset, not of the actual shift, like the thing that will change, a physical and mental change. Just seeing more of those base hits drop in, I think, will have a kind of cascading effect for him. I mean, he said that he didn't really allow it to affect him that much. He didn't really look at the shift and all the, you know, the numbers that he lost. Apparently, MLB.com wrote about it, and it seemed like he lost, I believe, 20 base hits due to the shift last year, which was the most in baseball. But I think that he is going to greatly benefit by it, even if he's not changing his approach, which I think is good. I think even when they were shifting, it was like, this is the approach. The guy absolutely stings the baseball to all fields, one of the best pure hitters in the game. And don't let that shift change you. And I think that it is going to really pay some big dividends for him. I mean, he's so hot. He's even hitting home runs off of his former teammates. He hit a spring training home run off of Clayton Kershaw. He said he thought this was the first time that he had ever gotten to Clayton Kershaw. Clayton, after that game, said, quote, I just thought maybe he'd pop it up, and he didn't. So he won. I'll give it to him. Tip my cap. Thankfully, it didn't count. We'll see him again in July. And Seager responded to that by saying, that will be different. But Kershaw also said that he'd probably have to strike him out about 8 times for it to be even. But still, good to see them having some good fun. A Hall of Famer versus Corey Seager, who may eventually be a Hall of Famer. Not a surefire Hall of Famer, but we'll see how healthy he can be and how good he can be throughout the life of this contract. But if he has the kind of season that I'm expecting him to, which, again, I have some pretty high expectations for Corey Seager, but then again, so does Corey Seager, and so do the Rangers, and so does pretty much everybody. I think that he is going to live up to those. I mean, the guy, I think, is underrated as a defensive shortstop. I'm a little worried about how the shift is going to affect his defense, but I think that the concerns about him headed into free agency before the Rangers signed him, about everyone said, this guy's going to be at shortstop for like maybe 2 years and then shift over to third. I don't necessarily think that's the case. Yeah, he is a little bit bigger than the average shortstop at 6'4 and 215 pounds, but seeing him play there every day last year, it wasn't the prettiest. I mean, it wasn't Elvis Andrus at his peak. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't Francisco Lindor out there, but it was fine. More than serviceable, especially for a guy who is going to provide that kind of offensive value. And even though most of the traditional numbers were kind of bad for him last year, I mean, you look at what he did at home and setting a career high, blowing past his career high with 33 home runs, the most ever for a left-handed hitting shortstop in Major League Baseball history. There's definitely a lot to like about what he did last year, especially if you look at his home versus away splits. The guy loves hitting in Globe Life Field. I honestly think that it was a huge part of why he signed with the Rangers. He hit so well in those playoff series when the Dodgers won their first World Series in many, many moons since, I believe, 1984, 88. Someone is yelling at me who was alive then. and why I could not remember it, because, well, I'm not a Dodgers fan and I wasn't alive then, but it has been a while since they had done that. They won in the shortened season with the weird playoff system, with the first World Series that has ever been held at Globe Life Field. Hopefully there will be more World Series games held there where the Rangers actually participate and not just future Rangers participate. But the guy was absolutely incredible at Globe Life Field. If you look at his home versus away splits, 76 games at home, hit 273 on base of 351, slugged 550, a 901 OPS, and 22 of his 33 home runs came at home. Look at what he did versus on the road, 75 games there, hit 217, on base in the 280s, slugged just 363, a 645 OPS away, which is, I believe, 256 point difference in home versus road splits. That's pretty extreme. That has not been the case for his career. He has not been that drastic. Granted, this is the first year that he had Globe Life Field, the Corey Seager paradise, as his home park. It's been kind of extreme. 898 OPS at home for his career versus 808 away. So a little bit more extreme than usual, but it seems like he just feels more comfortable at home. And thankfully, he feels very, very comfortable at his new home, where hopefully he will continue to absolutely destroy baseballs this year. Coming up, we're going to look at expectations for him, what kind of numbers I think he will put up, and what other projection systems have for Corey Seager. But first, this episode is brought to you by Built Bar. The Built March Madness bracket is here. We know you all have a favorite Built bar or puff, and now is the time to make it count. Go to builtmarchmadness.com to vote for your favorites. And when you vote, you will be voting for your favorite bar or puff. You'll be entered into a drawing where 50 lucky Locked On listeners will get a free box of Built. Not only that, but one Locked On fan will win a 12-month subscription to Built to have those Built's best bars or puffs delivered monthly straight to your door. You got to try yourself. Some Built is the best tasting protein bar ever. Seriously, they are so amazing. You won't think they're good for you, but they are. I promise you they are. So run to builtmarchmadness.com right now to vote for your favorite bar or puff and pick up a box while you're there. You can vote every day in March, so hop in and support your pick. Now, Corey Seager, the projections on him for next year are pretty wide-ranging. Last year, he had a 3.9 baseball reference war, but a little bit better of a Fangraphs war, 4.5 war, according to Fangraphs' calculation. But the expectations on him are not necessarily to repeat what he did last year. They are a little bit more improved on what he did overall. Fangraphs' projections have him but just at 143 games played, all the way down to 25 home runs, which, again, would be among the better seasons of his career. But I think that he has really turned a corner and got some grown man weight. So the, 22-year-old Corey Seager, who was hitting 26 home runs and 40 doubles in a season, the more well-aged 29-year-old Corey Seager has a little bit more oomph in that bat. And I think that the 30 home run mark is a more realistic target. Granted, with fewer doubles, I don't think he's going to have any more 40-plus double seasons, but I think he will have several more 30-plus homer seasons. Fangraphs also projects him to hit 276, which is 31 points higher than he did last year, on base of 350, which I think is a much more reasonable projection, and slug 480, a 135 weighted run created plus. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's just a catch-all overall offensive metric, where 100 is the average. So they expect him to be 35% better than the league average hitter. Last year, he was 17% better than the league average hitter. They also project him for a 4.8 war season. That's a lot of numbers just thrown at you, but they don't expect him to be that much better. They expect him to play in fewer games, which I think that was one of the, I mean, Corey Seager had a lot of not super bright spots last year, but I think him just being healthy, playing 150 games for the first time since 2016, he's literally only done that once in his career, was his rookie season when he won NL Rookie of the Year and finished third in MVP voting back in 2016. The Rangers just keeping him healthy and on the field and producing was a big hat tip to them. Probably could have been a couple more games if the Rangers were still in it at the end of the season, but they weren't. So they sat him, kept him a little bit healthier. Only had really one injury, I believe it was a quad injury around the All-Star break, coming out of that. I remember that being on a road trip to Anaheim, where he missed quite a few games. But for the most part, he was in the lineup pretty much every day, contributing pretty much every day. And the Rangers training staff, a huge hat tip to them. Now, like we talked about a million times, Corey Seager, most of his injuries were kind of freak injuries, just kind of random things, not some recurring thing that will pop up. So I think that him playing 150 games again next year is not out of the question. Granted, there's always random chance that he might get injured in some kind of weird slide or have like Tommy John surgery or whatever it was that kept him out for so long after the 2018 season. But still, I think him being healthy was a huge, huge hat tip. Now, Baseball Reference does not quite, I don't think they are as high on Corey Seager. They have him hitting exactly 25 home runs, same as Fangraphs, but they have him hitting 266 on base of 337, significantly lower than 350 of Fangraphs, and slugging 469 and 806 OPS for him there. They have 82% confidence that that will be a reliable projection for him, but he's entering his prime. This is prime Corey Seager. That's why I think it was very disappointing for him, because you'd think usually like 27 to like 31 is usually a player's prime. And so having one of those early seasons be unsuccessful for the Rangers as a whole, losing 92 games, and having Marcus Semien spend half the season still trying to figure out his swing, having both those guys signed for big money and the Rangers not competing was difficult. But I think that each of those guys really needed that 1 year to kind of get their heads around what it's like to be in Texas, to be part of the Rangers system, to learn what it's like just to live near Arlington and figure out a completely new team. And I think that having that under their belts, having a normal spring, having a normal offseason, one without a COVID-induced pandemic where they can't leave their houses, or without a lockout where they can't go and practice at their facilities or talk to their coaches or management or anything like that. I think really, I mean, I've said it so many times, but I really believe it's going to have a truly massive impact on these guys. But for Corey Seager, the numbers that I'm expecting him to put up are huge. They are, some of them are bigger than he has done in his career. But I am expecting that from Corey Seager. Like, he looks completely different in spring training. He knows what's needed of him. I think that him being on a team that is hopefully going to be winning a lot more is going to help. Not that he was unmotivated or anything last year, but it just kind of adds that certain extra level of emphasis. And that is something that Corey Seager had never experienced. He had never been on a losing team. That's one of the joys of being able to play for the freaking Dodgers for your entire career, come up in 2015 and be in the thick of things, or if not the favorites to win it all, or at least your division for basically your entire career. And then, boom, here you are 28 in Texas on a team projected to finish last, that finished next last in their division and just completely fell on their faces when they were proclaiming to the world, hey, look, we're not going to suck this year. And then they still did. I think that was a very difficult adjustment period for him. Semien had been on the A's for some years, so he knew what it's like to be on teams that there were not high expectations for, but still, he has been the guy. He has been a guy, at least, one of the better players in baseball since 2019, so him taking that step back as well, I think, was difficult. But for Seager, I'm projecting him to play 152 games. Yeah, one whole game more than he played last year. I don't know if he's going to get to 157. That feels like, which is his career high, which is what he did in 2016. That feels like a bit much to ask for him. But I think he's putting up a slash line somewhere near 295, with an on base of 380, slugging 525, which would be a 905 OPS, 30 home runs in a 6-WAR season for the first time in his career. In his age 29 season. Yeah, neither projection has had him had a 6-WAR season. The highest for Fangraphs was 5.4 in 2017, and the highest for Baseball Reference was at 5.3, also in 2017, which it's weird that he finished lower, significantly lower in MVP voting that year than he did the year before, but that might have been having to do with somebody else. But anyway, I'm really expecting big things for Corey Seager this season. I don't like to tie players' performance to the amount of money they make, but generally that's kind of the way it goes. That's kind of how things are looked at. And I don't necessarily, I'm not going to bash any players for securing their bag and then not living up to it. But it's just kind of one of the things that the way that this sport and really all sports work is that you kind of have to live up to your contract. And while I think he had a fine season last year, I know by no means was he happy with it. And I think that all of these different factors in terms of him, you know, being a leader on this team, being more mature, having, you know, Bruce Bochy as a manager, being on a team that will have a better pitching staff, all of those different factors, I think will end up playing very, very heavily in his favor. Having a Nathaniel Lowe backing him up, I mean, sandwiching him in the lineup is going to be Marcus Semien in front of him and Nathaniel Lowe, the reigning Silver Slugger at first base behind him. And then take your pick of whoever's behind him. But he's going to have a lot of lineup projection immediately in front of him and behind him, which is something that he had a lot of with the Dodgers. Now, granted, I'm not saying that the Rangers lineup is going to be anywhere near what he was used to with those peak Dodgers teams. He does not have, there is no other Mookie, there's no Mookie Betts in this lineup. There is no Will Smith. There's no Max Muncy at their peak. There's no MVP level Cody Bellinger. But there are very, very good players on either side of him, and deeper on in that lineup, Corey Seager is going to be able to not have to be, not have to do literally everything, which I think was kind of what was being asked of him and Semien last year. Granted, hopefully a healthy Mitch Garver will also lessen that offensive ask of them to do literally everything, and Lowe being exceptional like he was last year would also kind of lessen that burden, and Adolis Garcia continuing to be very fun, exciting, and also a good offensive player will also lower that bar for market or for Corey Seager. But I mean, people kind of forget that Corey Seager has been one of the best shortstops in all of baseball. He just has been. And because he's been hurt for many years, broke out and was fantastic for 2 years, and then kind of injuries derailed that. And then last year, everyone's like, oh, well, he's on the Rangers, and the Rangers suck, so who really gives a crap about that? But I think it's going to be a, like, reintroduction party for him this year. Granted, he did make an all-star team this year, kind of by the skin of his teeth, by having one of the best weeks of his life offensively in a string of one-run losses that still make me want to scream when I think about them. But he was an all-star for the first time in many years and absolutely deserved it. And I think that people are going to remember that, oh, yeah, this Corey Seager guy, it really is one of the best shortstops in baseball. I mean, last year he was in the top number seven in terms of Fangraphs WAR for shortstops, behind guys like Francisco Lindor, Dansby Swanson, Trey Turner, Xander Bogaerts. Wow, they really had so many of the top shortstops in baseball being free agents the last 2 years. But he was ahead of Bo Bichette, Carlos Correa, Ha-Sung Kim, and old friend Elvis Andrus as well. I think he cracks his way into the top five, if not the top three, in terms of WAR production from a shortstop next year. That 6 WAR season, there's not a whole lot of guys who can do that. Xander Bogaerts did it last year at 6.1. Trey Turner, Dansby Swanson, and Francisco Lindor all did that, but Seager at 4.5 was behind Willy Adames and Tommy Edman. I think he can jump both of those guys, have a fantastic season, maybe even jump Xander Bogaerts, because who knows how many games at shortstop he'll be playing this year. But Corey Seager is a Texas Ranger, and because last year was so disappointing, I think we forget how freaking good this guy is, and I think a lot of things have changed in this offseason, and I'm really hoping that Corey Seager, looking like the Corey Seager of old and absolutely destroying everybody, every pitcher that he faces, is going to be another thing that changes this year. And that shift, whew, I'm so excited to see if this spring training is a harbinger of things to come or some kind of false hope. But I am definitely banking on it being some genuine, inspiring hope, because, you know, we all need it. Why not? But thank you all so much for making Locked On Rangers your first listen every single day. For your second listen, go check out Locked On Fantasy Baseball. Win your league by listening to Matt and Dom every day, and they bring you the best fantasy draft strategies. Find Locked On Fantasy Baseball wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. Thank you all so much for listening and subscribing. And until next time, don't forget to enjoy baseball.